Welcome back to Locked On Jaguars, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Chris Thornton. I'm joined by my co-host, Zach Goodall, and we are doing a Locked On crossover with Locked On Vikings and are joined by host Sam Ekstrom. Sam, say what's up to the people.
How's it going, Jacksonville? The Vikings fans can certainly sympathize. We are the two teams that came just shy of the Super Bowl. We're in the same boat.
Both came so close and so far, and it wouldn't surprise me if might be some of the favorites coming out of either conference. The Vikings getting much stronger this offseason, as well as the Jaguars shoring up a few holes on their roster as well. But we're really going to put the focus on the Vikings now that we have Sam on. So, Sam, just give us a rundown real quick of some of your favorite acquisitions, then we can obviously go a little bit deeper as well.
Right. Well, the big one's got to be Kirk Cousins. That was the focal point of the offseason. The Vikings were in this wacky situation. And the way I describe it is kind of like, you know, Game of Thrones, where you've got all these different people that feel like they have the claim to the throne. That was the Vikings quarterback situation. You had Teddy Bridgewater, you had Sam Bradford, you had Case Keenum. They all felt like they were the rightful starter. And the Vikings throw a curveball. They let them all walk, and they bring in Kirk Cousins on the $84 million guaranteed deal, and they've probably upgraded there, to be honest, guys. They've got a guy that's been super consistent, super durable for three seasons, and durability, that was the issue that the Trump said, best season as a pro. The value wasn't there. He was worth as much this offseason as he would ever be worth, and knowing his track record, he was probably going to come back to earth. So the Vikings didn't want to pay him more than he was worth. They go get a guy in Kirk Cousins who was the best on the market, and that's the big offseason move for them. You know, secondary to that, the day after they bring in Cousins, they sign Sheldon Richardson to upgrade at that three technique on the defensive line. That's going to be a huge help to them, and sort of their most explosive defensive tackle pass rusher since Sharif Floyd. I mean, Floyd was a really promising player who had a surgical mishap a couple of years ago that really derailed his career. So Richardson will bolster that defensive line, which was already very strong, and a couple complimentary signings, primarily Tom Compton on the offensive line to sort of swing good. They got most of the defense back. They've got a lot of weapons on offense back, and now the goal for them is just to sign and retain some of those key pieces internally. But that's a whole nother conversation.
And then leading into the draft, you guys, I didn't think you guys would make this pick, but you guys went with Mike Hughes out of UCF at 30. And you guys already had Xavier Rhodes and Trey Waynes, who had been pretty good for the Vikings, but then spent a first-round pick on a guy who I thought was going to go a lot sooner in the draft, but a really good talent in Mike Hughes. Just elaborate a little bit on that for me.
Sure. Well, first of all, you guys took Taven Bryant. And there were a lot of people here that were targeting Taven Bryant as that defensive tackle. Everyone knew the Vikings needed some depth in that area. They lost Tom Johnson and Shamar Stephen to the Seahawks. They ended up going with Jalen Holmes in the fourth round from Ohio State, but Bryan was a guy they were targeting. So when Bryan went off the board at 29, then Hughes at 30, yeah, it was a little bit of a surprise, but here's the deal. You've got Trey Waynes, who's been, yes, pretty good on an upward trajectory, but he's going to be in his fifth year next year. He's going to be worth, you know, a ton of money considering he's a starting corner in this league. The Vikings don't really have the funds necessarily to give him the money that he'll demand. They've got to pay Anthony Barr. They've got to pay Danielle Hunter. They've got to pay Stephon Diggs. And they're going to be hurting for cap, especially with the money they already owe Kirk Cousins, Everson Griffin, Xavier Rhodes, Harrison Smith, Linval Joseph. They've got a ton of huge salaries. So Waynes could be a casualty of the cap, which means they got to bring in somebody at a lower salary like Mike Hughes. And Mike Hughes probably isn't going to start this year, but he could be a weapon on special teams immediately. I think he's probably your week one kick returner, maybe your punt returner as well if he beats out Marcus Sherrills. So he'll be immediate contributor on special teams. And as far as cornerback's concerned, only had really 1 year of college film at Central Florida, but it was a great year. He put up some big numbers, and he proved that he could be a tremendous weapon actually when he had his 1 year at junior college in Kansas at Garden City, where he turned a lot of heads, and that earned him his second chance at Central Florida. He's a great talent, and there's some concern about the off-field issues, obviously, but if he can get past that, sort of like Dalvin Cook had to overcome that when he got drafted by the Vikings the year prior, and he's been a saint, if Hughes can follow that same path, then I think the Vikings got a steal.
Now, I'd like to circle back to Kirk Cousins for a second, because like you said, that was really, truly the focal point of the not only the Vikings offseason, but really when you look at it, the entire NFL offseason. And there was so much drama with that. And like you said, with how they might be strapped for cap space in the future, being the first fully guaranteed deal, really, for quarterbacks in terms of that level of getting paid. Like, that's just an incredible deal. But give us kind of a rundown as to the entire approach with Kirk Cousins. You know, like you said, you had the three guys that felt like they could be the starter, and they decided to go their own way, go and chase Kirk Cousins. But how dramatic was that when free agency was starting to kick off with other teams trying to be involved, or were the Vikings really the team from the get-go?
Right. Well, I think that Cousins has that Midwest connection because he went to Michigan State. I think he certainly was drawn to the Midwest, and obviously Minnesota last year was one of the best teams in that region, and obviously he's closer to family, and he comes to a city that is willing to embrace a franchise quarterback. The Vikings will have had now five consecutive different quarterbacks on week one. I mean, they go from Ponder to Castle to Bridgewater to Bradford, and now it's going to be someone entirely different. And this fan base just wants to latch on to somebody for more than 1 year, you know, and obviously Kirk Cousins, I'm sure, weighed that into consideration. He's going to a place where he's definitely wanted. But I think Case Keenum last year, as good as he was also a little bit volatile. He threw a lot of balls, guys, that could have been intercepted easily. And if there was a stat, I don't know if Pro Football Focus tracks things this deeply, but interceptable passes, Case Keenum certainly would have been up there amongst the league leaders. There were a lot of reckless throws that didn't burn him. And then if you remember that Saints game, you know, in the divisional round, he threw a terrible interception to let the Saints sneak back into it. And he threw a really bad ball against the Eagles in the NFC title game that led to a pick six. And Mike Zimmer, throughout the year, you know, was always trying to rein him back in, trying to get more level-headed play from Keenum. And I think he finally got a little fed up. And Cousins isn't going to necessarily do that. He's not going to kill you. He's always been pretty careful with the football. The Vikings really value ball control in their quarterbacks. The defense in Minnesota is already set perfectly for a quarterback of Cousins' caliber. I mean, it's going to be a defense that, you know, gives him a lot of opportunities to win games. They're not going to allow more than 20 points very often. So it really is a match made in heaven for Cousins. He gets to be in the Midwest. He gets to play for a contender. He's got a great defense. He's got a pretty consistent coaching staff and a new offensive coordinator who he's familiar with from his time in Philadelphia, and I'm referring to John DeFilippo. So there were a lot of factors that came into play that just aligned perfectly for Cousins' marriage with the Vikings, and there's a lot of positive momentum in the Twin Cities, guys. People are pretty excited about it.
And on top of it, seems like a whole new facelift Vikings compared to a few years ago. You guys get this up-and-coming team who's competing to have the best roster in the NFL and was so close to getting to the Super Bowl. They also have a brand new stadium to be playing in, US Bank Stadium, that just hosted the Super Bowl. So all the Kirk Cousins is just basically going to a whole new Vikings, I guess just whole new energy around the Twin Cities, like you said.
Yeah, you've got the stadium, you have the Super Bowl, you've also got a brand new practice facility, and I'm sure the Vikings wooed Kirk Cousins with that as well. And the Jaguars will be hosted there. I'm sure they'll be treated very well in August when they come for joint practices. The TCO Performance Center is amongst the best facilities in the league. It's state of the art in terms of weight room, recovery equipment. Medically speaking, they've got the best rehab staff that you can imagine. And they've got every resource available. They've got indoor and outdoor facilities that are spectacular. So all the resources are here in Minnesota. It's suddenly become this tremendous place to bring free agents, whereas 5 years ago, you've got kind of the dumpy Metrodome, which wasn't, you know, really that aesthetically pleasing, and you had one of the league's oldest, dingiest practice facilities, and suddenly you've got the state-of-the-art. So the Vikings have become a little bit of a destination, I guess, and the success doesn't hurt that either. When you're a winning team and you have the right facilities, that becomes an attractive location, and Kirk Cousins believes he came to a winner, and the Vikings are certainly within that window, I think, where they can still be talking Super Bowl here for the next couple of years.
And mentioning that Vikings-Jaguars training camp preseason crossover, in a minute we will go a little bit deeper into that to kind of discuss what two of the up-and-coming defenses and new kind of looking offenses will be portrayed in those battles. Guys, are you guys having a hard time getting it hard? Well, let's listen up. No. Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. BlueChew.com. That's blue like the color blue. BlueChew.com brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients in Viagra and Cialis, so you know that they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor visits, no waiting in pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and Blue Chew prepares and ships direct. They're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use the special promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's Blue Chew, B-L-U-E, Chew.com, promo code locked on to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring our podcast. Now, we were talking about the Vikings and Jaguars preseason crossover practices that will be coming up. I mean, football seems to be getting closer and closer, but it still seems so far away. What are some things that you're looking forward to, Sam, that you think the Vikings will be good for them to go against, like, a defense in Jacksonville?
Right. Well, it's always a fun test when you pit Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen against a pretty talented secondary. That actually caused some tension 2 years ago when the Vikings had joint practices with Cincinnati. Adam Pac-Man Jones got yapping a little bit at Adam Thielen, who at that point was still pretty unproven in the league. Vikings fans knew that he was promising, but we didn't know he was going to be this good. Turned out he was really, really good, and that was sort of an interesting foreshadowing how the Bengals secondary didn't respect him, and then he turned out to be a star throughout the last 2 years. I think that's the type of thing, though, that you look for at these joint practices is sort of the chippiness, right? Because it's the dog days of summer. It's hot out there. You've got one team coming in, traveling, long flight. They're a little angsty. They just want to play some football. They want to hit somebody besides their own teammates, because you've got weeks and weeks of OTAs, mini camp, training camp, and you're just going against the same guys. It's sort of friendly fire for about a month there. And then you finally get someone else in. It's like fresh blood, and boom, you want to go at it. So I think we can definitely expect to see a little bit of chippiness, get the blood pumping a little bit, and see some good battles in 11-on-11 drills. That's always what you look for is when you get the receivers against the guys in the secondary, because obviously there's not a lot of tackling going on, so it's hard to judge how the defensive line's really doing, mm-hmm. How the linebackers are doing, but you can still have a good pass breakup or an interception or an impressive catch, and that still demonstrates who's winning that drill. So that's what I'm always looking for at training camp. DBs against wide receivers, that's certainly what I'll be having my eyes on when the Jaguars come to town.
Now, looking at the Jaguars offense versus the Vikings defense, and like you said, they still have some of their guys in-house, especially at cornerback, but as well as Sheldon Richardson being added this offseason, Mike Hughes as well in the role that he'll be serving. What are some matchups when you flip it from the Jaguars offense versus the Vikings defense that intrigue you?
Well, I'm really intrigued more from your guys' standpoint how Blake Bortles would fare, and I don't know how much the Vikings will dial up in a joint practice, but if they really show him the double A gap, just to see how he fares against that, because Bortles had a great year last year, led you guys to the AFC title game, almost to the Super Bowl. I think a lot of people had doubt whether he had that capability, and I think there's probably still a little bit of doubt nationally about whether he can back that up. So he'll get a great test against the defense, and not just in these joint practices, guys, but in the preseason game as well. He'll get a great test against a linebacking core that can really rush the passer, a defensive line that from the edges is one of the best in the league with Everson Griffin, Danielle Hunter, Brian Robinson as the third man, and obviously the secondary. But, you know, I also want to see how the Vikings do bringing down a guy like Leonard Fournette. I want to see how they do matching up against a rookie, you know, DJ Chark. There's some tremendous battles there, and the Vikings, I think, claim to have some of the top players at each level of their defense. In the secondary, it's Rhodes and Smith. It's Barr and Kendricks at linebacker. It's Griffin and Hunter on the defensive line. And the Vikings don't believe that they should be beaten by anybody. So if Jacksonville can put up some big plays on Minnesota, that might kind of be the wake-up call they need to realize we can't rest on our laurels from last season. We need to bring it every down, every snap, and bring this thing back to where it was last year.
And it's really, if you look at both of these teams, just kind of at their ascension from the last few years and just how they've been built and how they are, they're almost, I don't want to call them mirror teams, but they're pretty similar if you kind of look how they're both built. Both are definitely led by their defense last year. Both have really good corner tandems, good linebackers, good D-lines, probably one and two respectively in a lot of those positions, depending on who you're talking to. And then the offense is both maybe not the headlining act for either team, but got better this offseason. The Vikings will be getting Dalvin Cook back, who last year was showing very good promise as a player before he tore his ACL. So it's really going to be interesting just to kind of see how all positional groups go against each other on either side, because in a lot of ways, they're a very similar team, so it'll be interesting to see if they can continue to keep that high level play against guys that they're not practicing against every day.
No, it's totally true, Chris and Zach. You know, you got the young running back, you've got, you know, I guess in your case, an emerging quarterback. In the Vikings case, maybe a little more established in Kirk Cousins this year, who we haven't actually seen throw a pass in purple, but the two defenses really carried the water. And the beauty of having a defense like that is that it takes so much pressure off the offense. You know, there were times last year when Case Keenum made some terrible mistakes, but the Vikings were able to overcome it because that defense was still so steadfast. And I think Jacksonville probably is in the same boat. That linebacking core is really impressive to me. The nickel defense, terrific for the Jaguars. Same with the Vikings. And you're right, I see a bunch of similarities. And I believe the hashtag was Saxonville last year, and the Vikings even couldn't live up to that. They had a great start to the year in terms of getting to the passer. They actually sort of depleted as the year went on. Everson Griffin was playing with a torn plantar fascia, which didn't help things. But, yeah, the Vikings could maybe learn a thing or two from that Jacksonville pass rush, because they were impressive last year, guys. First in the league in sacks, was it?
Ended up second. I think it was the last week of the year the Steelers flipped it.
Pittsburgh. Yeah. The Jags kind of slowed down as well towards the end of the season. They were firing on all cylinders, having a few 10-sack games, and then just kind of died out as the season went on. But was still getting pressure and causing opponents, giving them struggles. But it was so close to getting that Saxonville. I'm surprised I haven't heard Steelers fans actually come to me more often about that. But I think probably one of my biggest things that I'm going to be looking forward to is seeing shiny new offensive guard Andrew Norwell and see how he fares against this Vikings defensive line. Because it is, like you said earlier, it's different going against guys that aren't on your team versus guys who are on your team. You're probably not going to go 100%, whereas if there's a guy across from you that you know you don't need him the next week, then they're probably going to go a little harder. So I think that will really be interesting to see how the offensive line in general does against this Vikings defensive line, who is definitely top one or two in the NFL, depending on who you're talking to. Obviously, as a Jags fan, I want to say that ours is better, but they're both pretty close up there for the number one spot.
Yeah, well, if Norwell's going against the nose tackle or the three tech, it's going to be a great test, because you got Sheldon Richardson, who's trying to rehabilitate his stock. He's essentially doing a one-year prove-it deal. He's betting on himself. So he goes immediately into a contract here in Minnesota. He's surrounded by a bunch of talent, including Linval Joseph, the nose tackle, who, I mean, he's so underrated in the sense that he can take on two blockers and occupy them, but he still finds a way to put up numbers, too. He's not your nose tackle who sort of is just there occupying bodies, not really doing any damage. He actually can penetrate, get to the passer. He can blow up a run play. If you run on the Vikings on third and short, forget about it, because he's so big in there. He never gets pushed back. I mean, Norwell against Joseph, that would be a collision of titans there in the trenches. So I'm looking forward to that for sure.
And now that we've kind of talked a little bit about the Jaguars and Vikings battles, in a moment we are going to discuss a shocking an injury that I don't think a lot of people wanted to see. I know Draft Twitter didn't want to see coming out of the Twin Cities, as well as some internal battles for the Vikings. All right, Sam, so we got the unfortunate news today out of Minnesota that defensive end Hercules Mata'afa tore his ACL today in a kickoff drill. Just give me a little bit about what you guys were maybe looking forward to out of Hercules and if how big of an impact this might be for the Vikings.
Yeah, this is a tough one, guys. He was one of their prized undrafted free agents, and if people don't realize his story, basically, he was this undersized defensive tackle at Washington State. He's like 250 pounds, but he's playing on the inside. He was one of the most productive defensive tackles in the nation playing at that size. The Vikings signed him presumably as a linebacker. They were going to try to move him back a level, match him up against tight ends and running backs. They actually did an about-face, and they brought him back to the defensive line after rookie camp. So they moved him from linebacker then to edge rusher. So he goes from D-tackle, linebacker, to edge rusher. And this was a guy a lot of people had pegged, I think, as a sleeper pick to make this roster. Just a super, super guy and a super story. They named him Hercules because he was the biggest baby in terms of weight in his massive family. you know, Polynesian heritage, you know, a real warrior on the field, big time leader, and the intangibles were there. And I think the production was there. The effort was there, and people were comparing him to John Randall, which might've been a little rash, but it was still a fun comparison just because of his incredible motor. And then you get the news today, which is a real gut punch. We missed seeing this by one day in the media. We had access to yesterday's or Tuesday's OTA, I should say. We did not have access to Wednesday's, so we didn't see this happen. But you hate to hear that it happened during a kickoff drill because, you know, those things are rarely full speed anyway. It seems like guys are usually going about 75%. There's really no contact, so it must have been just an awkward step or a bad cut or something along those lines. But that's a bummer for Hercules Mata'afa because he's a dude that had an incredible college career, didn't get drafted because of his size, but based on his talent, you had to think he had a role in the NFL somewhere, and this will certainly affect his ability, I think, to get a job in the future.
And I was really surprised that Hercules went undrafted. I feel like in their later stages of kind of mock draft mania, that he was almost pegged to be a day two, early day three pick, and then he somehow slipped out and got to the Vikings, which I thought was another just great pickup by the Vikings. So definitely hurts to see a guy like that go down early. Wish him a speedy recovery, and hopefully comes back and can maybe fight for a roster spot next year. Now, the Vikings have a very talented roster. What are some positions that you think there might be some internal battles? Maybe a guy that might somehow steal away a starting spot from someone who may have had it last year.
Sure. I don't know if there's too many starting jobs that are available. I think maybe the offensive line is certainly the area where you're going to see the most movement and maybe the most surprises, just because there's so many bodies that you need to have to put together an offensive line. Vikings will probably keep 9. I think they've got about 12 players that have a chance to make that group. Chiefly among them, Tom Compton, one of the swing guards they signed in the offseason. I think he probably has hopes of starting potentially at guard perhaps, but they do have some contenders too. They've got Colby Gossett, who they signed in the 6th round out of Appalachian State. He could be an upstart sleeper to make this roster, maybe even start at right guard. They're still deciding whether they want to play Mike Remmers at right tackle or right guard because Joe Berger retired their right guard, so they need to fill that opening, and they're undecided who they want to fill it with. But there's quite a bit of competition on the right side of that line, but otherwise you're going for depth spots. I think Marcus Sherrill's actually the punt returner. I alluded to this earlier, but after an incredible career in Minnesota, and this was an undrafted player out of the University of Minnesota. He's basically been the punt returner for 7 years, guys. I mean, it's such a niche role. He doesn't play any other position. He's just an incredibly reliable punt returner. He's made the team on one-year deals year after year after year. And this might be the year he finally gets unseated by Mike Hughes, because Hughes comes in. He's probably not going to play at cornerback. You want to utilize him somehow. I think Sherrills could be on the hot seat this year at age 30. And he's actually the third longest tenured Viking, which is unbelievable considering his niche role. But I'm trying to think of other position battles. Holton Hill was an undrafted free agent who might make a bid to get a cornerback job. Mike Hughes, actually, against Mackenzie Alexander, could be a battle for that fourth cornerback job behind Terrence Newman at the nickel spot. Mackenzie Alexander's had his struggles early in his career, and Hughes could certainly challenge for that. And then the third running back job is a battle between Mike Brown, Rock Thomas, and Mike Boone, three names most people probably aren't familiar with. But that's the position the Vikings are in, guys. They don't have too many starting jobs that they're trying to decide. It's more about, you know, guys 40 through 53 on that 53-man roster, who you're going to fill in the cracks with. And that's a good position to be in.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was about to say. Like, if that's your biggest issue, then you've not got too many issues at that point.
Is there a chance that rookie kicker Daniel Carlson beats out Kai Forbath for the starting kicker spot?
Oh yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I should have mentioned that after the previous question. Carlson has absolutely outperformed Forbath so far. The media has seen three OTAs in person, and at each OTA, Carlson has outkicked him during field goal drills. And on Tuesday, it was an extremely stark contrast. They had a 50-yard field goal to wrap up drills. Forbath left his short, and Carlson made his by what probably was a 15-yard clearance. Like, it would have been good from 65. Guy has got a massive leg. He had a bad senior year at Auburn, but it seems like the Vikings have made some sort of adjustment with him. And Carlson has barely missed a kick in front of reporters so far, which is really impressive for a rookie. And I think this puts the Vikings at ease too, because now they don't have to worry about wasting a fifth round pick. When you bring in a rookie kicker with a fifth round pick invested in him, you expect him to perform, and he's done that so far. So if and when they inevitably, I think, cut Kai Forbath, I think they're definitely justified in doing so. Carlson has proved that he can kick under pressure in a competition setting. And I think he'll be the Vikings kicker next year.
And I can second that, because Carlson was down in Mobile for the Senior Bowl, where I had the pleasure of being for a week. And he was pretty damn good during Senior Bowl week, especially in some of those kind of not opportune days of weather. It was kind of cold, a little bit of rainy days. And he seemed to do pretty well down there. So the Vikings definitely got a good kicker, especially in the fifth round. At least it wasn't like the Buccaneers only a few seasons ago getting Roberto Aguayo in the second round and end up cutting him that year, which is a nightmare scenario for really any team. So, yeah, Carlson, Vikings fans, you guys are definitely getting a good one.
Yeah, Vikings fans are just nervous that it's going to be another Blair Walsh deal, because Walsh was terrific as a rookie. He was okay his second year. He was okay his third year. And then, as everyone knows, year four, they moved the extra point. He suddenly can't kick the extra point because it's longer, and it makes him struggle basically in the rest of his game. He can't handle criticism. And then it all comes to a head in the playoff game against Seattle. He shanks the 27-yarder, and then he gets the yips next year after that. So people are praying to God that Daniel Carlson has a little stronger mental fortitude than Blair Walsh.
That Seahawks-Viking game still hurts, because I was rooting for the Vikings real hard during those playoffs, and it was so close.
Yeah, that game had such incredible mystique, guys. It brought all of the early generation Vikings fans back to the days of Bud Grant and the Purple People Eaters and the outdoor Met Stadium. Seeing your breath, you know, icicles coming out of your nose. It was just a nostalgic feeling. And then to lose that game the way they did in -5-degree weather was about as great a gut punch as Vikings fans have had, and they've had a lot of them.
I can say that the Jags, in that aspect, bring old and new fans with the Bills playoff game this year, really kind of uniting everybody. kind of really driving up the hype behind the Jaguars. They sold, I believe, like 10,000 more season tickets this year than years past. So another mirror image between the two franchises, which I'm sure we'll probably get more comparisons if they have similar years again this year. Maybe, hopefully, for both of our sakes, meeting in the Super Bowl this year in Atlanta. But with that being said, I think that that will just about do it for this Locked On crossover between the Jaguars and Vikings. Sam, let our viewers know where they can find some of your work if they ever need to look in on the Vikings.
Absolutely. Well, on Twitter, at Sam Ekstrom for all the latest insights. I'm at the facility 4 days a week. I'm covering the team like a blanket. So we've got tweets, at Sam Ekstrom, and the writing, zonecoverage.com, covering the Vikings for them, but there's also Twins, Timberwolves, Wild, Gophers content there if you're into any Minnesota sports. zonecoverage.com, where you can find most of the work.
And then you can find Zach and I on Twitter, myself at Misto Christofo. If you haven't learned how to spell that yet, I'll just put it. It's in the bio of the Locked On Jaguars page. You can follow Zach at Zach_Goodall, where you can get some of his questionable takes. You can follow the Locked On Jaguars page at Locked On Jaguars, both on Facebook and Twitter. Visit LockedOnJaguars.com. We're beginning a positional breakdown series on there, as well as starting game-by-game predictions and insight and all that good jazz for the regular season. We just knocked out Game 1 against the Giants. Go give that a look by our writer, Rory. We will catch you guys later with hopefully another crossover with another NFL team to be determined.